From WYPR, I'm Maureen Harvey. We're On the Record. The most ancient shark ancestors swam the Earth hundreds of millions of years ago. What lessons can be learned from studying how they fight off infection? Evolutionary immunologist Helen Dooley explains.
When we look at sharks, we're always looking for novel immune molecules, maybe that they have and that we don't, that we could make synthetic versions of and use to treat people. So if you imagine we find something in sharks that's really, really good at killing bacteria, we might be able to make a synthetic version of that to treat people that are sick with bacterial diseases.
And Nick Sparrow of the Natural History Society of Maryland describes the allure of fossilized shark teeth. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning. I'm senior producer Maureen Harvey, sitting in for Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Even though the great white shark gets most of the attention, there are more than 400 different types of sharks. And sharks have been swimming the Earth's waters for hundreds of millions of years. They are tenacious survivors, outliving the mass extinction of dinosaurs. What can we learn from their ability to adapt and endure harsh conditions? Can studying sharks lead to cures for human disease? Here to help us answer these questions is Helen Dooley, an assistant professor of microbiology and immunology at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. Her team's laboratory is based at the Institute of Marine and Environmental Technology, which is a joint University System of Maryland research institute. Helen Dooley, welcome to On the Record.
Thank you very much.
Why study sharks to learn about human immunity?
So it seems like a little bit of a crazy thing to do. But when I think of the human immune system, what I think of is it's kind of the last chapter in a very long series of books, which is the immune system having developed over these millions and millions and millions of years. And really, we're the very end of that. Humans are the very end of that process. So when we look at the human immune system, essentially it's like reading the last of the Harry Potter series without reading any of the other books. You know, you kind of get an idea of what's happening and how everything ended up, but you don't know how it started. When we look at sharks, we're kind of starting at the beginning of that series. We're learning about how all the characters got into place and how they changed over time and how the immune system really developed and got integrated, and maybe how some molecules changed their roles over time and became more important or less important. And what that really tells us is it helps us understand the complexities of the system, and also, you know, what are really important things are usually conserved over very long times. So what are the really important things? What are the new things that have been added on? They tend to be the things that go wrong. So much like when you fix your car and you keep adding bits in, they're the bits that tend to go wrong. And the immune system is a bit like that. So we can use sharks to understand what the beginning of the story was. And then humans are kind of the end of that story about how the immune system has changed over time.
Would you say that the immune system of a shark is more basic than a human's? Are there more of the bells and whistles on a human immune system?
Yeah, so when we first started out, we actually thought that sharks would be really, really simple and really, really easy to understand. And that, you know, humans were way more, their immune system was way more sophisticated and it's great, you know, Ferrari of immune systems, whereas they would be like the Model T Ford of immune systems. We're really understanding now is that that's not the case. It's almost like the Ferrari immune system emerged just before sharks, and literally, you know, humans, we've just stuck on, you know, an air freshener and a couple of bumper stickers. But it's those things that we really need to understand, because our immune system is much faster and much more efficient. And that's a good thing when we're trying to fight bacterial diseases or viral diseases, but it's a bad thing when we get situations where we get autoimmunity. And it's these things, these extras that have been added into the system sometimes that are the problem. So it's really important to know what they are and how they've been added in and how they've been integrated.
And how do you use this information when you're comparing and contrasting?
So there are two things that we can do. One, we're able to see how molecules within the immune system, how they got integrated into that system, and maybe how they've changed over time. So if you can imagine, you know, going back to the character analogy, some things have changed their roles over time, and that maybe makes our immune system more efficient or more capable of recognizing different bacteria and things like that. That's really good because we can respond to bacteria more quickly, but in some cases it goes wrong. So we get diseases like lupus because our bodies are just over responding to different stimuli. So by looking at these molecules and understanding what they did when they first got integrated into the system, that allows us to better understand kind of how and why they go wrong. Also, a really cool thing is that every animal that we look at has a slightly different immune system. So when we look at sharks, we're always looking for novel immune molecules, maybe that they have and that we don't, that we could make synthetic versions of and use to treat people. So if you imagine we find something in sharks that's really, really good at killing bacteria, we might be able to make a synthetic version of that to treat people that are sick with bacterial diseases.
What types of sharks do you study?
So everybody thinks that we study great whites. That's the first thing that comes into people's heads. Obviously, for our work, what we need to do, we actually immunize animals. So we'll go in and give them essentially the equivalent of a flu shot, and then we take small blood samples over time to understand how their immune system works. It's not very easy if you're working with a big, bitey animal like a great white. So we work with smaller sharks. We work with nurse sharks. So anybody that's been diving in Florida will have seen nurse sharks. They kind of hang out on the bottom and they don't do very much. And we also work on chain cat sharks, which are very small, kind of only a meter long animals. And we work with those because they're easy to keep and they're easy to handle, which is good if you have to go and take blood samples from them. But also that kind of gives us those two species are separated by about 200 million years. So it gives us a real good window into what happened between those two species. And they're warm water and cold water species as well. So we get a little bit of insight into what happens between cold water and warm water animals.
You said they're a little bit easier to handle. How do you actually take a sample?
So we will take our animals out of the tank. We actually have a smaller tank. We dilute some anesthetic in there, so we sedate the animals. And then, you know, if we're immunizing them just like you and I, we immunize them in the arm or the fin in their case. So they just get a shot in the arm. And then we'll take a small blood sample from their tail vein.
One myth about sharks is that they don't get cancer. Is that true?
No, it's absolutely not true. I guess in the past, people thought that because, you know, you would generally catch animals and they're healthy and you know, they fight and they try and get off the line and things. But when you think about it, you know, if those animals are sick, if they have things like cancer, we're maybe not pulling them out because they're sick and they're already dead and their friends are probably eating them. So in terms of sampling, we're only sampling the healthy animals. Now that aquaria are getting really good at keeping sharks, especially for long periods of time, we're seeing more and more incidences of things like melanomas and things that are easy to spot. There's probably more different types of cancer that they get, but things that are easy to spot. So, you know, we absolutely know that they do get cancer. We don't really know if it's any to a higher or a lower level than humans yet. So that's something that we need to look at.
What other illnesses can they get?
Just like you and I, so they can get bacterial diseases, they can get fungal diseases. We don't really know what they get sick with exactly. It's really hard to tell sometimes that a shark is sick. If it eats something bad, it will invert its stomach and get rid of whatever the bad thing is. But it's kind of hard to tell when they're sick. They seem to, from our studies, respond really well to viruses, so it might be mainly viral diseases.
Break down how the immune systems of sharks are similar to that of humans.
So the human immune system, there are kind of three main pivotal pieces that we need to be able to respond properly to different diseases, different pathogens. So we have antibodies, which you've probably heard about if you've gone and got your flu shot or your holiday vaccinations, so you produce antibodies to protect you. There's a type of cell called a T cell, and we also have something called MHC, which is what they match when you get a tissue transplant. They match your MHC. And these three things are absolutely pivotal to the functioning of our immune systems. And actually, sharks are the earliest that we can go back in evolutionary time where we see those three things. Other animals have immune systems, but sharks are the earliest that we can go back where we still see those three key things. So that gives us a really good place to be able to look at how the different components then have changed over time.
And how are they different?
So they're different in lots of different ways. Obviously, they face different challenges to us. So we're on land, we're encountering things in the air, different sort of pathogens. They're in the water. So water has a much higher pathogen load, actually, than air. So they seem to have developed better systems for maybe fighting viruses, things like that. We've been doing a lot of work to actually try and pin down exactly what those differences are and what they mean. Sometimes just because there's a difference, it doesn't mean that it's important, but trying to figure out why it happened or if it is important.
That's evolutionary immunologist Helen Dooley here on The Record on WYPR. I'm producer Maureen Harvey, sitting in for Sheila Cast. We're talking about what shark immune systems can tell us about how human immune systems evolved. I want to go back to the antibodies that you mentioned. Shark antibodies are different.
Yes, they are. So in almost every animal that we've looked at, from humans right the way through to sharks, antibodies kind of look the same. So they're these Y-shaped molecules that are made up of a couple of different components, which we call a light chain and a heavy chain. And it's those that come together and they give you the ability to bind to lots of different targets on the cell, and so to be able to attack lots and lots of different pathogens. And there are one or two animals, and sharks are amongst them, that have a different shaped antibody. So they don't have one of the components of their antibody, which gives them a much smaller area to interact with pathogens. And you know, it sounds like that's it's not really important, but what it actually allows those antibodies that the shark has to do is to bind in places where maybe human antibodies can't. So they're able to really bury themselves into like little pits and clefts and things on the surface of viruses. So in the case of humans, why we have to get our yearly flu shot is because the antibodies kind of coat the surface of the flu because of the shape of the antibody. But we've got a project ongoing now where we're actually immunizing sharks with the flu virus, the human flu virus, to see if we can get some of these special antibodies that kind of burrow into the surface of the flu virus and are able to recognize all the different strains of flu. Rather than just, you know, each year you having to get your yearly flu update, these would be able to bind it no matter what strain of flu came up.
How did you start studying sharks?
it's a little bit of a crazy story. I've always been interested in immunology and immune systems, and I originally started out working on antibodies, but more on a biotechnology side of things. And during my PhD, I was actually supposed to be looking at immune systems of camels. And I started my project and we took samples from animals to look at their antibodies, and then we immunized them when we were going to go back and look at how they'd responded. And in the meantime, somebody rustled my camels. So they got stolen. They were out in Dubai or somewhere.
Oh.
So I was a couple of years into my PhD and I'd just lost my camels. And I was literally looking around for something else that I could do, and I spotted these really cool antibodies that were in the shark immune system, and I thought, hey, sharks, like, that's way cooler. I'm going to start working on that. I kind of never looked back from there.
So what are you working on next?
Next? Oh, we have all sorts of exciting things going on. So like you and I, so when we are babies, our immune systems aren't properly developed. And we think the same thing happens to sharks when shark pups are born. Maybe their immune system isn't fully developed and that they actually need exposure to good bacteria that's out in the environment to enable their immune system to kind of program itself properly and to know what's a danger and what's not a danger. So we really want to look at that, and that's important for human health because, you know, we're seeing this increasing incidence of hypersensitivities and things like that. And we think that's because in humans, maybe we're getting the wrong signals when we're very young. You know, this whole idea that maybe things are too clean and kids don't play in dirt very much, is that you're getting the wrong sort of signals and the immune system is kind of slightly out of whack. So we want to go in and test that and see if it's the same for sharks, if their immune system is dependent upon these key signals.
Well, good luck, and thank you so much for telling us about your research. Well,
thank you very much.
Helen Dooley is an assistant professor of microbiology and immunology at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. Her team's laboratory is based at the Institute of Marine and Environmental Technology. Quick break here on the record. I'm senior producer Maureen Harvey in for Sheila Cast. When we're back, the allure of ancient shark teeth. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm senior producer Maureen Harvey, sitting in for Sheila Cast. When you're relying on 32 teeth to last your whole life, each one is precious. Since sharks have several rows of teeth and can regrow them as they fall out, they probably feel differently. Their unique teeth are just one feature that makes sharks so interesting. So interesting that the nonprofit Natural History Society of Maryland is celebrating its second annual Shark Fest later this month. Here to tell us about it is Nick Sparrow, a biologist, forager, and fossil hunter. He's also a board member and an educator with the Society, which is dedicated to observing and appreciating the natural world. Thanks for being here.
Hi, it's my pleasure.
So Shark Fest is on Sunday, July 21st. What activities are planned?
We have some great speakers. We have Alan Hemmingskin from the aquarium in Baltimore. He's a shark expert, and he's going to tell you everything you want to know about sharks. We have Dr. Stephen Godfrey from the Calvert Marine Museum, a great paleontologist. He's going to give us a talk about fossil sharks, how you can determine the damage that sharks do to whales just by looking at the bones.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And are these talks geared towards adults or kids?
They're probably geared more towards adults, but we have activities for kids. We have face painter. We have crafts. We'll have games. So it's definitely a family event.
Why do you think people are so fascinated by sharks?
You know, sharks have been vilified from the beginning of time. And truthfully, I think sharks get the worst end of the deal. I mean, sharks' fins have been cut off and then they release the shark back into the ocean. Mm. They probably don't swim real well after that. Sharks are apex predators. That means they're the top of the list. They didn't get that way overnight. Sharks have evolved for millennia, and they're amazing animals. So sharks are pretty cool. It's people that have a problem with the sharks. Sharks don't have a problem with people. Mm. More sharks get eaten by people than people get eaten by sharks.
And then later this month, on July 27th, the Society is taking a trip to Stratford Cliffs in Virginia to look for fossils, including shark teeth. Why this spot?
This is a spot that's on the Potomac. This is a spot that during the Miocene period, 5.6 million to 23 million years ago, was an inland sea. Whales came in here to calf, so they gave birth, and sharks smell on a molecular level. Sharks smelled that, and they would come into these bays to feed on both the adults and the immature whales. So when they're feeding, as you mentioned, sharks have an indeterminate number of teeth. They shed a lot of teeth. They break teeth off. This is just a phenomenal place to find fossils, not just shark's teeth, crabs, shells. We found land mammal fossils in there. It's just a great place to go fossil hunting.
And the fossils are actually embedded in the cliffs, and then they over time they break off? Or are they coming from the water? Or where are the fossils found?
So the fossils are in the cliffs. They don't want you to dig in the cliffs. These cliffs erode anywhere from 1 to 10 feet per year, so they want to stabilize the cliffs. But they do wash out, and they wind up in the Potomac and get redistributed through storms. So you're basically walking along the beach looking for shark's teeth, shells, any kind of fossil. Indian artifacts can be found there.
That's biologist Nick Sparrow, a board member of the Natural History Society of Maryland, here on the record on WYPR. I'm producer Maureen Harvey, sitting in for Sheila Cast. We're talking about the Society's upcoming events on sharks and fossils. Is there a certain level of hiking experience that people should think about if they want to go on this trip?
This is actually a pretty easy trip. We're actually going to walk on the beach. So we have beach access to Stratford Hall, and we drive down to the beach, walk maybe 100 yards to the beach, and then you can go right or left, maybe a mile in either direction. There are some trees that you have to scramble over, but for the most part, it's a pretty easy walk.
What's the best way to look for fossils?
I get that question a lot, and the best way is to be old, like me, and have looked for fossils for years and years and years. So my eyes are pretty much trained. I take foraging trips and I show people wild edibles that they don't see. So my eyes are always scanning back and forth. This tooth that's on the table is a 5.5-inch megalodon tooth. Everybody thinks that tooth is going to be laying on the beach all by itself. It will, except for most of it's going to be covered. So you're only going to see a portion of that tooth, maybe the root, maybe a little bit of the enamel. You always have to be looking. Biggest rocks, whatever waves kick those up, are likely to kick a big tooth up.
So this tooth on the table here, it looks like, you know, you're a typical shark's tooth, but much, much bigger. It's about 5.5 inches long. The top of it is a dark gray that kind of looks like stone, and it appears to be the part that was maybe attached to the bone. And then the bottom part is a lighter gray. It's shiny, and it's very pointy.
You're exactly right. That's the root. The black part is the root, which would be embedded in the gum. And scientists estimate that for every inch of tooth, you're talking anywhere from 5 feet to 10 feet of shark. So that's a 5.5-inch tooth. You do the math. That's a big shark.
How do you know if something, if a shark tooth that you found is a fossil or if it's from a modern day shark?
So if you look, go to the aquarium and look at modern sharks, their teeth are white. Most fossilized sharks' teeth are black, blue, gray, brown. The fossilization process is a replacement. So the teeth have been replaced with minerals. So the color of the teeth are going to be determined upon the minerals that are in close association to the teeth when they became fossilized.
What is your favorite fossil that you've ever found?
My favorite fossil are the crabs. We find fossilized crabs at Stratford. It's a really good place to find them. Sometimes the definition is incredible.
The definition of the claws?
No, the definition of the whole crab. The carapace, the claws, all the legs folded up. They're decapods, so they have 10 legs. You can see all the 10 legs folded up. Pretty cool.
You also mentioned items that were used by Native Americans, and you brought some to show us. Can you tell us about these right here?
So these megs in front of us have been manipulated by Native Americans perhaps thousands of years ago, and at that time, the beach was probably covered with shark's teeth. The first time as a child that I picked up a shark's tooth, I thought, oh, my God, why wouldn't I pick that up and use that as a knife?
Mm-hmm, yes.
And I'm sure our ancestors thought the same thing. If you look at this tool, the part of the root has been knocked off, and this would have been hafted. A handle would have been affixed to it, and it would have been used as a scraper, any number of tools. These were ornamentations. I've seen shark's teeth that have been drilled. I'm not talking with a Stanley drill and a titanium bit. These were drilled out with hand tools. It took a lot of time. So someone revered that tooth enough to drill it out and wear it as an ornament.
If people are looking for more information about fossils, what other resources does the Natural History Society provide?
So we have a fossil club at the Natural History Society. We meet the first Wednesday of every month from 7:30. We have a great group of people. We have phenomenal speakers that come out and give talks, very knowledgeable people, and we take some great trips. 10 of our members went up to New York, and we all found trilobites.
And what is a trilobite?
Trilobites are aquatic invertebrates that lived during the Devonian period. A long time ago.
They look kind of like a horseshoe crab.
Similar, exactly, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for telling us about all this, and good luck looking for fossils.
Hey, thanks. It was fun being here.
Nick Sparrow is a biologist, forager, and fossil hunter. He's also a board member and an educator with the nonprofit Natural History Society of Maryland. At the On the Record page at WYPR.org, you can find more information about Shark Fest and fossil hunting with the Natural History Society of Maryland, as well as other upcoming events. I'm On the Record senior producer Maureen Harvey, sitting in for Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.